You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
In response to Waikiri Prison Expansion, Action Station reached out to the general public to find out if they believed that government's justice reform was heading in the right direction. 9% of respondents were Maori. According to 2012 stats, Maori make up 51% of our prison population. Action Station decided to create a targeted report to find out the perspectives of Maori on the justice system in New Zealand. Director of Action Station Laura O'Connell-Rapira tells me more about the perspectives and what is believed to attribute to the mass incarceration of Maori in New Zealand.
The key themes as to why there are a mass incarceration of Maori is that, firstly, it stems back to colonisation, so it's really important for people to remember that prisons didn't exist before colonisation. The first prison was built in New Zealand shortly after the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi, which was in fact one of the first breaches of the Treaty of Waitangi, and the first person who was imprisoned by the British Crown was a Maori person. And often throughout the process of colonisation, there would be a process in which the British Crown would tend to arrest and incarcerate people who would rebel against the process of colonisation. And the other thing that happened through colonisation, of course, is that Maori people's land was forcefully taken from us. What that means is that a couple of generations down the line, you don't have as much economic power as those who took your land from you, which is a push factor in that people are pushed into poverty and therefore acts of crime that are now punished, and Maori get incarcerated for that. In some ways it's a very rational response to poverty to commit theft in order to feed your family. The other major theme that came up was institutional racism results in the state locking up more Maori than non-Maori, and I don't think that's new information. You know, we have the police commissioner, Mike Bush, in 2015 admitting that the police have unconscious bias, he calls it, but we would call it racism because it's not always unconscious, to be frank. What we know from the literature is that Maori who are apprehended will go on to be prosecuted. 46% of those cases will be prosecuted compared to 9% for the same offence when a Pākehā person commits that. The discrepancy there is huge. Then the other really striking statistics, which I think are just really important for people to remember, are that 64% of the people in prison have suffered some kind of traumatic brain injury, and that's compared with just 2% of the general population. More than 90% of the people in our prison have mental health or addiction issues. And 23,000 children who currently have a parent in prison, those kids are 9 times more likely to end up in prison than a child who doesn't have a parent in prison. And so, in short, our justice system fails to support people with brain injuries, locks up people with mental health issues, and actually imprisons generation after generation of Māori whānau. So it's basically failing at breaking a cycle of imprisonment for many Māori.
I just want to jump back to colonialism for a second. So in terms of colonization, many Pākehā will respond to that with the sentiment that colonialism is in the past. How is this not the case?
Yeah, it's a great question, and you're right, it is one that comes up time and time again. And I think what is important to remember is that colonization hasn't actually finished, because we still have a settler government that's power is loyalty, I guess, or it's power is enacted through the British Crown. The original agreement that our people and our ancestors signed up to in the Treaty of Waitangi was the understanding that British subjects could live in New Zealand and they would have governance over British subjects, but Maori would retain tino ranga tiritanga, sovereignty over our lands, language and taonga, our treasures, that which we deem precious. And so a true enactment of what the treaty relationship should have looked like is that British subjects, or Pākehā, modern-day Pākehā today, would be governed by the government and the British Crown, and Māori would have a own separate and parallel system operating, and that would be tino ranga tiritanga in action. And so that's not the reality today, and so that is still colonisation. The fact that we don't have that is colonisation in action. So that's one thing. But I think the other thing, probably, because that's probably a little bit like constitutional and abstract for people, is that it's not actually that many generations ago that my grandma was beaten in school for speaking te reo Māori in school, and as a result of that my parents can't speak te reo Māori and neither can I. And there is more and more research that's coming out that shows when a people are disconnected from their land, which happens through colonisation, their language and their culture, which happens through laws, detriment to your identity and your spirit and your being is the kinds of things that causes mental health distress and distress issues, is the kinds of things that, when you're in economic deprivation, pushes you into acts that are punishable by imprisonment. There's a really important factor that goes alongside colonisation, which is intergenerational trauma, which can be described as the trauma that one carries through the generations, from my grandmother to my mother to me. And so when we talk about colonisation, we're both talking about the fact that it is still Pākehā and British laws that are in place in New Zealand, and the fact that there is intergenerational trauma that's carried through because of that process.
Just in terms of the justice system, obviously it's a punitive justice system. How is this ineffective?
A couple of ways. I think that fundamentally, if we look around the world at systems of justice that are working, and by working I mean they successfully rehabilitate people who have done harm to another, and they restore the relationship between that the person who has done harm and the person who has been harmed, we can look to our own history prior to colonisation, not all hapū or iwi. Some of those methods before the signing of Treaty of Waitangi were very violent, but some of them were really wonderful. And so that's the other thing that's important to remember, is that all hapū and iwi did things differently prior to the Treaty of Waitangi being signed. But if we look into the Scandinavian model, there is a prioritisation of when someone commits harm, there is a prioritisation of trying to look at other things other than imprisonment, because prisons are actually really violent, ugly places. And what you do is you take people who have mental health distress and addiction issues, traumatic brain injuries, and gang affiliations, and have come from violent backgrounds. Like 77% of people in New Zealand prisons have once been a victim of family or sexual violence. And so you put all of those people into cages, essentially, and then expect them to come out better humans on the other side, which is just a ridiculous notion. And so in the Scandinavian model, they really try and avoid incarceration, and so they prioritise things like community service, home detention with electronic bracelets. And in the Netherlands, because they've prioritised that way of doing things over the last, I think, 10 or 15 years, they're actually seeing the closure of prisons. By 2020, 19 of their prisons, since they started doing this work, will be closed down. And alongside that, the crime rate and the recidivism rate, which is people coming out of prison and then committing other crimes, has dropped dramatically as well. Because the other thing that they do is they wrap services around the people who have done harm, because they recognise that a lot of the time it's hurt people that hurt people, by actually intervening and giving them the support that they need, mental health support, drug and addiction support, whānau support, community support. You can actually bring those people to a place where they will change their behaviour. And the other thing that's important in those countries, and also in Māori culture, is this nature of collectivism. In the West, the system, and in the West generally, Western liberal democracies, we focus on the individual and we treat and punish people as individuals. In the Māori worldview, there was always this idea of collective accountability. So if you brought harm upon another, you are harming not just that person, but their entire whakapapa, and that's their lineage, their family history, their ancestors, and you are also harming their entire hapū. That brought with it shame. And that kind of shame was what helped keep people from wrongdoing to others, because there was that collective accountability, because essentially it's about relationships. And if you bring harm upon another, you're damaging that relationship, and relationships in the Māori world are the most important thing.
That is all my questions, but did you have anything else you want to add?
Oh, one thing I would add maybe is that next year we're going to be organising people to visit their MP, armed with a copy of our report, to talk about why they should prioritise and centre Māori views and values in their justice reform policy and thinking. And I would really love for as many of the people who go and do that to be non-Māori, because one of the things that we really think a lot about at Action Station is that the burden of having to undo the negative and ongoing consequences and harms of colonisation shouldn't sit on the shoulders of tangata whenua alone, but it should be informed by tangata whenua. And so we've done the work to gather the views of over 900 Māori and put it into a report for people. And what we would now love is for volunteers from all around the country to sign up with Action Station to visit their MP to talk about these issues informed by that. those perspectives.
It's fucked.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.